Elizabeth Gilbert, the international best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love, is in Indianapolis to help launch her dear friend Iva Nusser's new book. Iva's memoir is From Rifles to Roses, Memories and Miracles. It's about her childhood in Beirut and her growth into her life's journey to find the magic and spirituality in life and to share it with others. The two are appearing at an event at St. Luke's United Methodist Church this evening. The event is called A Dialogue Between Friends. It starts at 7, but you can talk with them this hour on No Limits. Our phone number is 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@WFYI. You can reach us through Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Send us a tweet at WFYI. I'll be back with Iva Nusser and Elizabeth Gilbert right after NPR News.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I'm Barbara Lewis, filling in for John Krull, who's on vacation this week. I have two wonderful authors who are great friends in studio right now. Indianapolis's Iva Nusser is releasing her memoir, From Rifles to Roses, Memories and Miracles. Iva is also a mentor, a speaker, someone who seeks out the spirituality in everyday living. Her new book is being released at an event this evening at 7 at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Indianapolis. And the event is titled A Dialogue Between Friends, because her friend, who will join her on stage, is international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert. And most people know her from her book memoir, Eat, Pray, Love, which was turned into a very successful movie as well. And the book sold, 10 million plus copies. But Eat, Pray, Love is just one of her best-selling books. She's coming out with a new book in September called Big Magic, and it's about living a creative life without fear, something I think both these women know a lot about. So you can talk with Iva Nusser and Elizabeth Gilbert by calling us this hour. Our phone number for No Limits is 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@WFYI. You can also reach us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can send us a tweet at WFYI, and I'll be repeating those numbers. But the phone number again, 866-476-3881, because I'm hoping you'll be joining us this hour. Welcome, Liz and Iva. It's good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have to start with how you met. How did you guys meet?
Why don't you take it this time? We always toss this story back and forth to each other, and I'd like to hear your version.
Otherwise,
of it.
We end up talking over each other. So,
which will happen anyway. I just did.
How did we meet? Well, we were at. I was working at Turtle Island Preserve in North Carolina, Eustace Conway's Natural Wildlife Preserve, and I was learning how to make cornbread in a skillet on an open fire. And Eustace walks in and announces that special friend and special guest, Elizabeth Gilbert, is coming. So we all huddled in the kitchen, and eventually I peeled myself away from the chore, and I looked straight ahead, sitting in front of the fireplace, was this creature, blonde, beautiful, beaming woman. And we made eye contact, and I think that was it, Liz, wasn't it?
It was. It was the feeling that I had when I met Iva was, oh, thank God. Here's my friend. You know, that happens every once in a while in life. I mean, I think we speak often of romantic love at first sight, but there's also such a thing as friendship love at first sight. Mm-hmm. And if you're very fortunate, every once in a while you have those moments of keen recognition, and you just think, ah. There she is. There's my buddy.
And it transcends it transcends this feeling of you don't have to understand or believe past lives or future lives. It's just a moment of I know you.
Mm-hmm. But there's yes. Something also to like deep friendship, because mm-hmm. there is that instant friendship, and then you go away and you never see each other again. But you have formed this really deep bond, and I guess I'm asking you to brag a little bit about each other. What is it that makes the other one so special to you that you really get out of this relationship that keeps you coming back to it?
We were speaking about this last night together, sitting in my hotel room, and I was saying that aside from the pleasures and the joy and the delight of somebody who lives in a state of wit and optimism and general friendliness to the universe, which is somebody who I always want to be friends with. There's a contract that I feel like Iva and I have with one another, which is based in this holding each other accountable for the deal that we've made in this life, in our own lives, and then we sort of reflect that back to each other, which is a commitment to not embrace a life of martyrdom. It's a decision that we both decided at some point in our existence, that we're not doing that. That's not what we came here to do. We did not come here to be martyrs. We did not come here to model martyrdom to other women. We came here to be tricksters. We came here to be playful. We came here to enjoy. We came here to love. We did not come here to intentionally suffer. And so when life throws things at either one of us, I feel like we bring that back up to each other as a reminder. Are we doing this? Are we really doing this? Are we going to get married to suffering here? Or is there a way to twist and dance out of it back into the light? And that's what I call you for in the middle of the night when I'm trying to figure out how to get there again. You're my go-to.
Yes, and not that it has to be this way, but I've noticed that over the years, those calls, whether you're making it to me or me to you, have become less and less, because now we've filled the calls with an even bigger objective, which is, what do we fill this void that was occupied once?
Once you take the martyrdom away, you have a big vacuum.
You have a big vacuum that can be filled with miracles and the mind of all possibilities, which has been a huge inspiration for me to share my story, and through the inspiration of your story, Liz. Right. So there's that. It's bringing in the new story as we're putting the old one to rest.
And Iva, let's talk about your new story. I mean, which is your memoir. Why did you decide to write a book, other than maybe a little urging from Liz now and again over the years?
Urging from Liz, and I must say from a handful of people in my life and clients over the years that felt that there was some value to things that I've been through. And of course, it took me a while to really align myself with who am I in a very substantial way. Who am I to put my story out to help someone else? And then once I got through the shyness of it, I realized that we do reach for freedom through each other, and that, yes, there is a value to sharing, and especially when the sharing is coming without guards and completely revealing and coming from the heart, and enough humility, but also just enough feeling that I have a voice and I am an ambassador for change in the world that is badly needed, I believe. So yes, Liz definitely anchored that in for me in many ways over the years.
So you're born in Beirut.
Yes.
It's the picture on the cover, I have to admit, I would just kind of stare at it and want to just, I'd show it to everybody. Look at this cute little girl. I mean, you're just absolutely precious. Take us back and you know, how did that childhood in a war-torn country kind of form who you are today?
Well, let me first say that what was my war on the outside could have been someone else's war on the inside of the home. So we all go through trials and tribulations, and we all have shadows and beasts, you know, to deal with. For me personally, growing up in a war-torn country somehow became a canvas that I opted to cover up with white paint all over again and start. But there was always the imprint on that canvas that motivated me to make choices. Do I want the impression of, you know, the symbol of rifles and that kind of rifled attitude with life? Or do I want to see myself through rites of passage and with support of life itself and the universe to choose what my memories are and to move forward that way? So I wouldn't wish growing up in the war on anyone, of course. However, it gave me a sense of myself that there are no regrets.
And that goes back to what you were talking about just a tiny bit ago about not choosing, not mm-hmm. to be a martyr. So I'm wondering who came to that conclusion first? Because I know you write, mm-hmm. Liz, that you kind of aspire to be Iva. And I'm wondering if that, your choice was made as a child and your choice came a little later?
I think it was more of a resonance of familiarity.
Okay.
There's the lovely minister Carlton Pearson, who got famous and in some circles notorious because he was an evangelical preacher who decided to quit preaching hell and sin and just preach universal love, which, of course, makes him a heretic.
Made David mad. Yeah.
But he has a wonderful line that I heard recently where he said, there's a difference between what we believe and what we know. And what we believe is generally based on what we were taught. But what we know is what we remember down at the sort of molecular, cellular level, what we know. And I feel like when I met Iva, I was going through a very tumultuous time in my life, and I was going through a very embittered and extended divorce and a lot of, anyone who's got $10 to buy a paperback of You Pray Love knows what was going on, and so when she brought these ideas to me of, what if we're not here to white knuckle our way through life, it wasn't something that I had necessarily heard or had been taught before, but it was something that I felt like I remembered. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it resonated. Nothing can resonate with you unless it's already in you. So somewhere deep down inside, that made a lot of sense to me. And it also just felt more exciting and more interesting, certainly more creative than living in a static state universe where, stuff is just happening to you and you're just fending it off, as you're being hit by snowballs at a million miles an hour. I much preferred the idea of, okay, now what do we step out of this into? That just feels so much more generative and thrilling.
And I would love to hear the story because I read it again preparing for this interview in Eat, Pray, Love where you're featured. Mm-hmm. And it's the road trip, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had many adventures. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about those later in the hour. But we've read Liz's version. I'm wondering what your memory of that road trip and kind of set the stage for us.
Well, the invitation for that road trip actually came to me while Liz and I serendipitously met in Beirut, Lebanon. She was on one of her writing assignments, and that's a story for another time. But before going separate ways, me coming back to the U.S., Liz invited me along to join her for this book tour for The Last American Man. And so we embarked on this journey. She picked me up in North Carolina, I think, and we started finding our way through the Midwest. And that particular stretch, that particular, I can close my eyes and actually feel the seat of the car. And I'm just so, it was such an alive moment where we were open internally, but also open to this realm of possibility. And Liz was having a hard time. And of course, as a friend, I just wanted the best for her. And so somehow it came up in conversation to why have you recruited? Like, have you recruited help? Where's your petition? And it doesn't have to be someone, it could be anyone that's living in spirit. It could be a memory. It could be, and she just, again, the resonance of familiarity, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. you just took that and literally ran with it. She started scribbling. She's like, give me just a minute.
And this was a petition to God.
Yes,
to
this is the petition to God.
Final.
It was a petition to please yes. just let this end.
Let this end, yes.
Because my ex-husband and I had just, and I think it came from such a real tenderhearted place in me where I thought, also for him.
Yes,
we're
that,
not
yes.
serving each other. Mm-hmm. This is a battle that's gone on now for 2 years in this divorce that is very ugly and it's not helping. But we can't seem to end it. So could somebody, and Iva said, you're a constituent of the universe. You're allowed to, you're allowed to, like a constituent of a government, write a letter, ask for services. Mm-hmm. Who would you like to have help you end this?
And we just started making Michael J. Fox, yes. Mahatma Gandhi. I mean,
oh,
you just went.
Eleanor Roosevelt signed it.
No, this is
in your imagination. Yes, and not in your imagination. In your pleading.
In
the petition to God for intervention.
Yeah, I was driving and Liz was
just kept throwing
was
out
the passenger.
Names.
Yeah, she within seconds. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. You know, because I know. Not telling what Liz would come up with, but she had a paragraph of a very elegant and very direct and honest petition to God. She's like, listen.
We're not helping anybody.
Let's get this thing going. And so she looked at me. She's like, do you think your parents will sign this? I'm like, of course my parents will be the first in line to sign this. What about my grandmother? What about your grandpa? And it just went from there. We brought in Bugs Bunny. We brought in Michael J. Fox.
And then the phone rang.
Yes.
And it was my attorney saying the divorce papers are signed.
We're done.
Well, keep listening to No Limits. We are far from done with Iva Nusser and Elizabeth Gilbert, two wonderful authors. And I hope you'll join the conversation when we come back. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm Barbara Lewis, filling in for John Kroll. There is a great event tonight at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, starting at 7 p.m. Elizabeth Gilbert, author of Eat, Pray, Love, The Signature of All Things and Big Magic, is joining her dear friend Iva Nusser, who is out with her new book about her life, From Rifles to Roses, Memories and Miracles. They're here now, and we're talking about friendship, life's lessons, and more. So join us by calling 866-476-3881. So 866-476-3881. You can email us your question at nolimits@wfyi.org or reach us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can even send us a tweet at WFYI. And we have a call from Katie. Let's go ahead and take her call.
Hi.
Hi, Katie. What's your question?
My question is for Iva. And actually, Iva, this is from Becca, but I'm calling in. How do you help people who may feel alienated by religion or from their spiritual selves to connect with a spirituality and find a way into that?
The first thing that comes to me, and hi, Becca, hi, Katie. Welcome to Indianapolis.
Thank you.
The first thing that comes to mind is you have to choose to redefine your relationship with those labels. Not let what has been given to you, whether it's been passed on over centuries or whether it's just from personal experiences growing up in your own household, to let, for example, a reference to God or even the word universe to become an experience that is imposed on you. If you have a connection within yourself and within life and you know that there's more than just you and more than just the material world, and you connect with nature or whatever is your source of connection, I say bring that meaning into whatever you choose to define as your iconic reference. And that's usually a good place to start.
And Liz, how did you develop your spirituality? I mean, how would you describe it for yourself now?
Well, I'm very fortunate because I didn't have anything to undo. My parents were sort of strangely neutral on the question of religion. They were neither atheists nor fundamentalists. They were open in a sort of vague and general way that didn't put any toxicity into me in either direction. So when the time came when my spirit of its own accord organically started longing, there was nothing I had to break down first. I feel like a lot of the trouble that people get into is that first, I didn't go out there in rejection of anything. I just went out there in search of something that would move and animate my soul and kind of help bring myself back to life. Mm-hmm. May I add one other thing as well? Just to remind you, everyone, that the fundamental origin story of every single religious tradition on earth is exactly the same. Somebody had a spiritual experience that was really weird. Somebody had a miracle. Someone had a hallucination. Someone had a psychic break. Someone got a message. Someone had a vision. And upon that, some sort of a religious tradition was built that immediately became very suspicious of exactly those things, which I find very interesting and strange. You know, that if you go back to whatever your religion is, if you go back to its beginnings, it's some pretty freaky stuff going on back there. And then all of a sudden, once that hardens into orthodoxy, then whoever is leading that institution says, oh, wait, we don't do, you know, we don't do freaky miracles around here, not anymore, you know, and why should that be closed to us? Because that's where it all started, and that's where it's all in the end heading.
And with your friend Iva, it seemed like that was kind of thrust on you. I mean, it what happened to you simply happened. But it does take an amount of courage, I think, to put it in a book and say, these unexplainable things happened to me, and they're real.
Absolutely. For me, it took the courage that it took was a courage that I cultivated over the years. And by the time I was ready to write this book, it actually there was more creativity, need for creativity than the need for courage per se. But yes, it was definitely a process to get to that point of saying, I am who I am, and here's my message and here's my story. Mm-hmm. So it's unedited, definitely.
Right. And is there a story, one of those experiences you can summarize for us so our listeners get a good idea of what we're talking about?
You know, there's one that comes to me immediately right now is my experience with the dolphins in the waters of Hawaii. I was in Hawaii on sabbatical, and my intention was to try and have an experience with the dolphins, but not something that's been staged or you know, I didn't want to buy a ticket to get on a boat and go. And I ended up being led by a pod of dolphins that took me basically probably over a mile swimming in the ocean, not realizing that I had swam that long without even having to surface for a breath of air. And when I did become rationally aware that I didn't breathe, I surfaced, and that's when I lost my momentum with them. So the pod took off, and there I am in the middle of the ocean, which is such an amazing metaphor for, you know, being in the middle of sea of possibilities. And I had to make a choice in less than 2 seconds whether I was going to go into fear or no fear. And that was such a huge turning point for me in terms of registering and memorizing in my every cell, in my entire being, the power of choice and how one would lead into one direction and then the trajectory of magic and miracle that can come from that. So I ended up just surrendering and releasing myself to wisdom and fate and just started swimming back in a direction that brought me back to shore safely. But there's something about that experience, amongst many other mind-bending experiences that I've shared in the book, that always stands out.
So was the decision about to fear or not to fear? I mean, when you said you made a decision, or is it more
than
that?
Well, because, you know, because I was in the middle of the ocean, literally stranded.
Panic would be a rational thing to feel.
Very rational, because first of all, I had no intention to swim away from my kayak or shore. I didn't realize that I was being adopted by a pod of dolphins, you know. And I surfaced, and there was no landmark anywhere. I literally had no idea where I was, stranded in the middle of the ocean, so to speak. And so I chose to know that I knew what direction to go into, and I chose to know that I wasn't alone. And so it just brought that knowing to surface in a very, very practical way, in a moment that I really needed to feel that I was safe and knew where I was going.
And Liz, can you relate that to other aspects of your life? Because, you know, that knowing, or, you know, your new book, The Big Magic, which is coming out in September, it's Creative Living Beyond Fear.
Yeah. Okay. Which is, it's important to look at the connecting word there, that it's beyond, not without. Because I have very rarely in my life achieved fearlessness. my trajectory has always been more of I was born an exceptionally anxious, very wound up person. It's just how I'm constituted. Fear is my constant companion, and for years I tried to fight it and bury it and kill it, and you know, and finally I just realized, look, we're just going to have to be working together. We're not going to get anywhere here, you know. And so what I do is I spend a lot of my life in conversation with fear. So instead of yelling at it or trying to deny its existence or trying to eradicate it, which I've learned is an unlikely thing for me to do very easily, I just explain to it what I'm doing. You know, I think a large part of what creativity blocks us with is that question, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to try to write this book? Who do you think you are? You mentioned this, Iva. Mm-hmm. Who do you think you are to try to go out there with this message? That's fear's deepest concern, you know? And I feel like we always get paralyzed at that question. And it was years before I realized, well, if you take away the aggressive tone of voice, it's actually a very reasonable question. And all you have to do is answer it. So whenever that questions arise now and the voice says, who do you think you are? I just say, oh, thank you for asking me. I'll tell you, I'm actually a child of God, like all of us. And as a member of creation who was born of creation, I feel that it's part of my responsibility and my joy to participate in creation. So that's what I'm doing. And that's why I'm trying to write this book. And fear goes, oh, I was just asking, you know, it kind of just goes away. So I feel like everything is better in conversation and communication. So I completely understand this idea of choosing how you're going to be interacting with fear rather than trying to pretend that it doesn't exist or that it has no relationship.
But you have to get out of the way. You have to let that split second, that pause that allows you to either have a conversation or to deny it, or it's that willingness. It's foregoing that stubbornness that gets innate. Like stubbornness is a friend of fear sometimes.
Yeah.
And so that split second sometimes of the pause in the mind allows the entire universe to become part of that conversation.
There's a line that says somewhere between the action and the reaction, there's a pause, and in that pause, everything is possible.
Hallelujah. Yes. Yeah.
But you have to learn how to build that tiny little cushion of space to even have that moment of pause before you instinctively react.
And I don't know if it's in the prologue of this book or what, but I remember you saying about Iva, describing Iva as the calmest person you knew. Now, I don't know who you've been hanging out with. But she does seem extremely, extremely calm.
You hear that voice?
Yeah.
That velvet voice?
Yes. Well, yes. My parents might not entirely agree that I'm this way all the time, but for the most part, yes.
Right. But is that something you cultivated? Was that, you know, kind of finding that pause?
Both. Definitely both. I feel I am gifted in that I have been part of an ancestry, and maybe, you know, I get, it's interesting, you know, I draw my parents into this, but it's true. I mean, I have traits from each of them that have given me the privilege of having a head start. Despite the war, despite things that I've had to overcome, there's always been something that's sustained that sense of calm and peacefulness. And who knows where I'm from, what little spot in the universe, and what I brought with me into this world to just kind of top it off. And then I worked really hard over the years, making choices and seeing them through. But somehow I was motivated that there was value for that calm. So that's a short version of the.
Do you feel like, you know, because we look from the outside and we see international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert, and we see a seer and somebody who lives their spirituality every day in you, Iva. Do you feel like you've arrived? I mean, do you feel like you're at a different place? I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I mean, do you feel like you're kind of at this plateau, or do you feel like it's always this little teeter-totter that you're on?
Plateau is linear.
Yeah.
I've spun off from a linear experience of life. Not to say that I've mastered it or I don't have to remind myself, but I feel like I've cycled through enough patterns, and we learn through patterns and cycles. But then there comes this moment in each of our evolution where with enough effort and study and creativity and dancing, you know, reckless abandon, that you spin off into a new opportunity, a new set of cycles. So I feel like I have definitely spun off and I'm looking forward to what's ahead. I'm listening and I'm open and I'm aligned and I'm available and I want to be engaged and I want to have a dialogue with the world. So we'll see where it goes.
Okay. And Liz, how about you?
I struggle with stuff in my life, and I fail myself at times. And I am certainly capable of lying awake at 3 o'clock in the morning and ruminating over something I did wrong 4 years ago, and not quite being able to find the footing for either self-forgiveness perspective or just like, could you just drop this so that we can go back to sleep? You know, that's, you know, my struggle is always that I get irritated with myself when I can't fix relationships and I can't fix things the way I want them to be fixed. I still struggle with this idea that I should be in charge of things. They should be, you know, I'm sure I don't have to explain this to anybody.
Not to me, but yeah, maybe
many
somebody
people
out there
have that
listening.
Feeling. Yeah. But I've learned over the years also, I feel like where I'm with the years and the joy of being in my 40s as opposed to being in my 20s, for instance, there's this sense that I am increasingly a responsible steward of myself. And I feel like that's the highest aspiration, particularly for women in a way, that are you a trusted caretaker of your very own self? Can we start there? This animal body that you've been given to take care of, are you sweet to it? Are you nice to it? Are you kind to it? Are you kind to your sort of broken mind? Are you able to sort of bathe yourself in compassion and rest when you need it? And increasingly, the answer to that question in my life is yes, which doesn't mean that I always get it right. It just means that I know that I have a footing in self-compassion and that I really don't want to practice violence against myself. And then once I can kind of remind myself of that, I can try to pick my way through whatever disaster happens to be going on around me or even within me, you know? And I remember, Iva, you and I having a conversation once that was very difficult for us, where you just said, can we just take a moment to make sure that we are both sitting in our hearts right now before we say another word, you know? And I feel like that's another question of pausing. And before I act, I try to ask myself that question. Before you send that email, before you get in that Twitter war, you know, before, can you just take a moment to make sure you're sitting firmly in your own heart? And is this really the action that you want to take? And I'm getting better and better at that.
Okay. I understand what you mean by sitting in your own heart, but I wonder if you can explain what you really mean by that from your perspective.
These days, I'm in love with the word. I've always loved the word dialogue, but these days, alignment, being in alignment within myself allows, it's almost like getting a good chiropractic adjustment and making sure that you have, you know, ambidexterity physically, mentally, emotionally. And so that creates a sense of harmony, a harmony that is part of harmony within similar to an instrument, tuning an instrument, you know, when all the chords and when all the strings are playing together, there's a harmony that then emanates through the heart field. And that sense of presence and alignment, being current and aware, not distracted by what Liz said or what I said, that's the emanation. It's a very musical experience being in the heart to me.
And every decision I've ever made that wasn't made from that place, I have regretted.
Sitting in your brain,
sitting in my ego.
Yes, yes.
Sitting in my panic, sitting in my blame. Right. You know, those decisions, well, understandable and human and common, are the ones that I go back and go, man, I really should have taken a couple breaths or a couple days or a couple months before I engaged on that. But yeah. We're getting there.
Absolutely.
Work in progress.
When we come back, we have this great question. We hear mixed messages. Details are so important, or don't sweat the small stuff. Which is it? Somebody on Facebook wants to know. And then when we come back, we'll talk about that. But I am talking with Iva Nusser, a brand new author of a wonderful memoir. And there's an event at 7 o'clock tonight. Doors open at 6:30 at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. It's called A Dialogue Between Friends, because her friend is international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert, best known for Eat, Pray, Love, but there's quite a few other books in her name. So we hope you join us. Again, our phone number is 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. More to come. Welcome back. I'm Barbara Lewis, filling in for John Kroll. There is a great event tonight at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. It starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are still available. Doors open at 6:30. Elizabeth Gilbert, author of Eat, Pray, Love, The Signature of All Things and Big Magic, is joining her dear friend Iva Nusser, who is out with a memoir called From Rifles to Roses, Memories and Miracles. They are here now. We're talking about friendship, life's lessons, fears, and more. Join us by calling 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881, or email us your questions at nolimits@wfyi.org. On Facebook, it's No Limits WFYI, or send us a tweet at WFYI. And I love this question because I think we all do this, right? We hear all this wonderful advice and we go, okay, what? Which way do we go? And the question was, we always hear mixed messages. Quote, details are so important, unquote, or quote, don't sweat the small stuff, unquote. So which is it? Are details important, or should we just forget about the small stuff and just go for the kind of the big picture?
I think the answer to that is very simple. Yes.
Both.
Yes.
Both.
Yes.
And the key word here is mixed messages. It's like having ingredients. How are you going to mix those ingredients proportionately?
Yeah.
To decide what details matter and what details don't matter.
And sometimes the discernment between what the, you know, what
right.
the situation is and which way you go. Makes all the difference in the world, which makes it so complicated because we're always looking for that secret.
Well,
I mean, we're always looking for that advice that's going to, you know, make it all make sense to us.
We all want ground under our feet.
Yeah.
And most of the time there isn't any. And the more you can sort of surrender into that, the less you worry about what the rules are, right? And what the answer is. And discernment is such a wonderful word. I love that Aristotle always proposed this idea that the highest human virtue is discernment, because you can't make these hard and fast rules. You can't, like, for instance, courage is a universally accepted human virtue, but Aristotle described courage as a very tall pinnacle with cliffs on either side. So on one side of the pinnacle of courage is cowardliness, which none of us respect, but on the other side is recklessness, which also is a problem. So there's this entire very narrow path that you have to sort of find, and to do that you have to use your discernment. Which virtue in which case? Is this a case where details are important, or is this a case where I don't? Unfortunately, the responsibility will never be off you. It's not enough to have someone hand you a bumper sticker and say, here's the answer. You have to constantly be sort of feeling it out and looking for it yourself. It's a job. But what's the alternative? Have someone else decide it?
Well, I can actually add a little bit to this, too. Definitely discernment. But then that sometimes can be confusing for someone that is feeling like they're in a situation where they're getting mixed messages. How do you discern? How do you get to that point of discernment? And I find that as that is being cultivated, the ability to discern, getting out of the way. So in a way, erring on first, don't sweat the small stuff, to diffuse the mind, to allow for a little bit of that respite. And then that opening allows all things beyond the brain and the thinking to be part of that conversation, inspiration. So there's discernment and then there's inspiration. And the combination of the two create a kind of precision in our lives, whether it shows up in synchronicities or whether it shows up in mental clarity, or all of a sudden my emotions are a little bit more stable, I can discern more easily because I'm not up and down. It's a combination, I think, of discernment and being truly, genuinely available to inspiration.
I remember Liz writing about you saying she had asked for some advice about a relationship, and you saying, don't listen to your head, don't listen to your heart, trust your gut. And then, Liz, you've developed a way to listen to your to gut. Has it worked, or do you still say, oh, hey, gut,
you know,
I want to argue with you?
Do you remember this, Iva? This was a very – I've passed this along to a lot of people who are in romantic distress who say, my head tells me, you know, leave this guy. My heart can't bear the idea of living without him. Do I listen to my head or do I listen to my heart, which is what I had brought to Iva. And she said – actually, she didn't say gut. She said lower intestine. You were very specific.
Not upper.
Oh, no.
That there's some place – how does it feel? I remember you just saying when you're in the presence of this person, does it feel safe down deep in the core of the core of the core of your being? And the answer to that was a resounding no. And she said, your head is so dizzy and confused right now, it doesn't know how to make decisions. And your heart is so squishy and soft and vulnerable that it doesn't know how to make decisions. But there's some ancient, deep, lower intestine part of you that already has the answer and already knows where you are safe and where you are not safe.
And is the lower intestine always accurate just for relationships, or can we broaden this out to give it some other another workout for other questions?
It depends on whether you're taking your probiotics and taking care of those insides. It does help. And it is. I mean, it is lower intestinal. It is gut. But where does that come from? That's, again, going back to this idea of harmony. And I talk about these ideas and these concepts in my book, where you need your head, you need your heart. We can't say all ego is not good, and we can't just be all heart. Those become cliches. That's where the confusion comes, is when we start experiencing the cliches and feel like I don't know how not to be in my head. I don't know how to be in my heart. Ask open-ended questions that say, if I were to be in more harmony right now, how much head, how much heart do I need? And surrender the question, and the answers come. Yeah. I just shared a few days ago with someone who was asking me a similar question, that life, our inner wisdom and voices from beyond are very generous with confirmations when we're available for the conversation. So confirmations and synchronicities come. So it is a gut feeling that comes from an awareness that I need to rest my head right now, I need to rest my heart. What does my gut tell me? And then it brings it back to 30% head in this situation, a little bit more heart, and like calibrating an oven.
And a lot of compassion for yourself in between.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Compassion for ourselves, which hopefully translates to compassion for those around us.
Okay. Well, we have a call we'd like to take. Greg is on the line. Hey, Greg, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
thank
great.
You.
What's your question?
It has to do, speaking with about cliches, as you just were, it has to do with something that often comes up in these conversations, and I heard it before from you, that, you know, dogma and doctrine get a bad name as opposed to personal enlightenment and experience. And I just wanted to add something as a Christian, as a theologian, actually. Sometimes doctrines and dogma are avenues of invitation into a new life rather than walls or something negative. I mean, for instance, in the Christian Judaic tradition, it's a clear doctrine that all are created in God's image. And it seems to me that enlivens and allows for a spiritual growth rather than as seen as a block or a negative. So I'd just like you to reflect on the positive role of doctrine or dogma.
Okay, great. Greg, thank you so much for your comment. Let's talk a little bit about that. How you've processed that, Iva?
It's a very important and very valid point. Obviously, needless to say, there's room for everything, and it depends on the intention. It depends on dogma is a tool. How is that tool being used? What's the motivation? Is it for a pure inspiration for myself and others, or is it to control and manipulate? Is it giving me freedom to discover myself, or is it imposing on me who I am supposed to be? So that's, in a very simple way, that's how I would approach that. That yes, just take the metaphor of dance, not just, you know, religion, you know, dogma and enlightenment, but just even within dance, you need just enough structure and technique to then free you into your freestyle expression of what that is. So doctrine and dogma can offer a foundation that can be very beneficial. It all depends on who's the messenger of that.
Liz, let's talk a little bit about, when we were in the break, we were talking a little bit about regrets. Because I think I hear, especially in that first question about which way do I go, is you're afraid you're going to make the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot at stake, I think, sometimes with us trying to live lives beyond fear or take fear as a friend, is you feel like the stakes are high if it doesn't go your way. And I'm saying your, maybe my
right,
way,
right,
our way.
Yeah, one's way.
One's
yeah.
way, yes.
You know, my voice gets a little shaky when I try to answer that because it's something that I feel is still unresolved in my own lived experience. I feel like it's so funny when people talk about superpowers that they fantasize about having. Would you rather have flight or invisibility or the ability to see through walls? Mine is always just the simple, I ask for nothing more than the simple superpower to go back in time and have done everything right.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so yeah. The fact that I even still fantasize on perfecting the past in order to have caused no harm to others or to myself means that I haven't completely accepted everything I've ever done, you know? And there's a part of me that can completely see how without every single one of those steps, no matter how painful and difficult they may have been, we would not be here. You know, I would not be who I am. I would not have been formed into the person that I needed to become, that was my hero's journey in a way, and not without cost. But I have to say, I wish I could sit here and tell you, clean slate, it's all good. There's not a single part of my history that I look back on and would do any other way.
It's no shame, true. No regret. Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Or maybe there's a pathology that's
yeah. You know,
to
I mean, and I did. Don't listen. I don't tie myself, you know, to a bedpost and whip myself up about it every night. But it's something that I work that I feel like I'm still working with, and still sort of trying to figure out how to digest and how to use toward the beneficial and perhaps the simplest manifestation of that is to just be a lot kinder to people who themselves don't really know what to do right now, recognizing that it isn't always obvious, you know, it isn't always easy, and we don't come away from every interaction saying, nailed it, perfect, scored, you know. I mean, who is that? Yeah. It's not anybody I've ever met. So it's certainly not anybody I would call at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was frightened or confused.
The 3 o'clock friends, like I'm watching,
yeah,
I have listened to you intently about this topic, regrets. And I think I hear shame and, you know, perfectionism and all those things that we have in our lives that drive us. They're all very human. And have you found a way to work with them in your life?
Yes, and still working on it. What I'm reflecting on right now is this exercise that I use and I share with friends and clients is, if you were to have a dictionary, your mind being the dictionary, mind being all that we are, not head. Mind is, you know, it. So if you had a mind dictionary that did not have those words in them, what would life be like? And that opens me up to, I play with imagination and it as a tool and as a state of being. What would it be like if we didn't even have regret as a point of reference? I'm not saying I need to have the answer right now in this conversation, but I guarantee you that which is observed changes. So if you're observing with a mind that doesn't even hold the concept of regret, what would that be like? What is our potential as human beings? Being human mm-hmm. is a magnificent thing, and we've barely touched the surface. So that's kind of where my intent was as I was listening, you know? So as you're simultaneously applying what Liz is talking about, and as we move through, you know, this dance with regret and shame. And as we're doing that, can we also simultaneously pretend and trying to imagine what it would be like to not even have that experience? And things happen. Mm-hmm. Things happen. We are inspired and we're motivated, and things beyond our imagination do come to us. That's why it's called beyond our imagination. So we stretch and we expand and we open up and we align and we shine.
There's certainly nothing to be lost in trying that. You know,
absolutely.
The best teacher, spiritual teacher that I always had used to always say, become a scientist of your own experiment. Why not? Give this thing a try. Give this thing a try. Does this work? Does this help? Does this open? Does this shift? And I think there's also a place, I find that I respond really well to rituals and to mm-hmm. ceremonies. Hmm. So when there's something that I can't kind of get out of me or process in any other way, I will invent a ritual or a ceremony around it. I will, usually involving, you know, writing something down, making something, destroying it, setting it on fire, turning it into ashes, eating it, putting it in a river. Like, there's things that you can sort of do with the elements, right? With earth, wind, and fire, where you create. This is a very ancient human custom. There's something too big for me to contain. I need to make an offering out of it, or I need to, you know, something I've got to do with this to get it out of me. And I find that that's often very effective as well.
Before we run out of time, talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing tonight. It's a dialogue between friends.
We're
going to
be laughing.
Okay.
That's a guarantee, isn't it?
Definitely.
Okay.
We're going to be telling stories about our own lives, our friendship. Iva's going to be reading. There's going to be some beautiful music. We're going to be interacting with the audience at St. Luke's. And it's just going to be a wonderful night of communion and community.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk about what you're going to talk about? Or do you just figure between the two of you, you have this...
We have
years
a cunning
both.
Plan.
I mean, we always talk about things. There's always a plan. Whether that plan actually, you know, manifests itself exactly the same way or not, we'll see. Okay. We have a pretty good idea, though, of where to at least to begin. We know where we're beginning, right?
We have some very good stories to tell.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And so, what's next? Isn't that nice to tell people who are already very accomplished and just came out with books and coming out with a book to say, "Hey, so what are you doing next?" You know. But
it's
what
a fun question, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you answer it first
question.
Because you have something around the corner.
Okay, you better, because we're going to be out of time. And then
I have a book called Big Magic: Creative Living Beyond Fear. It's my first bonafide 100% self-help book. I'm happy to call it that. It's a book about how to get in touch with the mysteries and the miracles of creation, how to become a participant rather than just a consumer. And it's coming out on September 22nd, and I'm psyched.
Good. And Iva, in the short time we have left,
I have speaking engagements lined up. I have amazing workshops like Guides in the Creative Muse and Generating New Traditions with Ancient Wisdom. And just, I'm going to be diving into some new projects, and definitely will be writing more books.
Good. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being our guest on No Limits. I told you that the joke was, if John wasn't actually on vacation, I would have had to tie him up and put him in a closet so I could host this hour. So I'm so glad I didn't have to do that.
Yes. That sounds like it would have been made for exciting radio.
That's true. Well, thank you both for being here. And good luck tonight. St. Luke's United Methodist Church, doors open at 6:30. Tickets are still available. A Dialogue Between Friends with Iva Nusser and Elizabeth Gilbert.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
My pleasure.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.